Welcome back to Driving Progress with Audi and me, Sonia Lennon. Join me throughout the series as I speak to a number of Audi brand ambassadors and special guests about living their passions and personal beliefs and the importance of personal progress and their attitudes towards the future. We welcome you to experience progress with Audi. Our guest today is Robbie Henshaw, current Leinster and Irish rugby star, a professional player and an Audi Athlone brand ambassador since 2012. We have the pleasure of having Robbie in the studio to discuss all things progress as part of the next episode of Driving Progress Series 2. You are so welcome.
Thanks very much, Sonia. It's great to be on.
It is indeed. And can I just say that I have spoken to some people who know you, and this is how they describe you. An absolutely wonderful guy for whom family is very important, and he's a very talented musician.
What are they paying you?
There was no money changed hands. I can absolutely guarantee you of that. I'd love to know how you would describe yourself.
It's a good question. It's always hard to answer questions about yourself. But for me, I see myself as a family person. Brought up through a house blessed with women, three sisters, mom and dad, were brilliant for me when I was younger. And, the girls made sure my head never got too big when I was in the growing up and stuff. So yeah, for me, I'm a family person, friendly and always looking to, give a hand where it needs to be given, and help people out if I can.
And so when it comes to a team environment, everything that you've just said is wonderful, but there must be critical skills and critical behaviours that take that to the next level. What do you see them as?
Absolutely. I think firstly, to be in a team, you have to have good social skills, you have to have good people skills to get along with a team. You also need to have a personal drive. Without being, completely focused on your own job, you have to work with others in the team. But I think, you need a bit of hunger, you need intent, if you are to make it in a top level environment.
Already listening to you, I'm getting the sense of a really wonderful sense of humility in all of this. When it comes to the issue of ego in a team environment, do you feel it's important to kind of keep that in check, to understand your place within a wider context?
Yeah, it's a brilliant question. Everyone has an ego, right? It's it can be brilliant for you. It can be, it can be terrible for you. It's how to keep it in check, as you said. Being in a team, you have to put your ego aside. A quote I love, I'm not sure where I read it, but when you enter the building, it was in some team environment, it says leave your ego at the door. Because, if you want to succeed in a team, you have to put your ego aside, leave it at the door. And what you're doing is it's not for you. It's for the benefit of the people around you and for, I suppose, a greater good. And we kind of look at that in our own environment in Leinster, that a quote from a previous player was, you write history for the future generation, so people coming through the ranks look to what has been done before and try to leave the jersey in a better place. So again,
that's quite a weight of responsibility.
Yeah, it really is. No matter what team you play with, I'd even look to my club level down in Buccaneers. If I was playing with them, it'd be the same. When you go into the change room, there's names of your previous players in previous positions. And luckily enough, my uncle and my dad played there. Their names are there. So it's kind of, it filters down to the lowest level, even in our sport. Even going way back, I loved when I was a child reading old programs that my granddad would have played GAA or played soccer in Athlone Town and reading that kind of history. As a youngster growing up and seeing them on the team sheet, or that kind of inspired me as well.
And you talked about being a youngster. what can you remember when rugby became part of your life?
Yeah, I listen, it was there since I was say I was 3 or 4 years of age. My uncle coached Buccaneers senior team with Eddie O'Sullivan back in the day, and I remember getting on trains to go to Cork, to go up to Belfast to watch games. I remember just, you know, at half time at games being on the pitch kicking the ball, and then I remember after games being in the change room with the men, the senior team, and just being in awe of like the whole thing. So yeah, definitely, you know, I remember it from when I was, you know, knee height.
You say you're in awe of it, and yeah, I can only imagine that you were, and amazing to have that access at that young age. Could you at the same time see yourself on the pitch?
I loved playing, but again, I never saw myself going on to, you know, achieve, you know, big things. And as a kid growing up, I always loved watching games, but I was more just, you know, I loved just playing the game with my friends, you know, just socializing with my friends, kicking the ball around. That was always my goal. And luckily enough, in school, I was middle of the road in terms of, I was never like physically talented, or I kind of hit a growth spurt in transition year. And then that's when things took off for me, and I came back in the summer of fifth year, and I was a different person. So hormones kicked in, and I suppose I came back, you know, a different person, different player, and things kind of fell right for me.
And can you kind of recognize any particular people who backed you at that point?
Yeah, I think it has to go back to my parents, first and foremost. Mom for doing all the washing the dirty clothes, the gear, the dirty boots, buying me boots every year, just the little things. And then Dad for, you know, just, I always remember he never forced me to do one particular sport. Rugby was his thing, but he always, you know, if I wanted to play Gaelic, if I wanted to play basketball and soccer, he'd never say no. He'd say whatever makes you happy, and I always respect him for that. But the one thing I'm always kind of like, oh, I wish you'd just let me play, was hurling. And I wanted a hurl. I was like, I'd love to play hurling. And I was asking about it, and he's like, I'm not going to let you play hurling. I was like, why? He's like, because of music. He's like, you risk breaking your fingers, breaking your hand. You won't be able to play the fiddle or the accordion. And I was like, fair enough. We'd have music lessons every Tuesday night, and we'd play on the weekends as well. So that was almost as dominant a sport growing up as well.
So talk to me about that. Those lessons, were they family lessons? Were they external lessons?
They were external lessons. A woman called Colette McNulty. Hope you listen to this, Colette.
Hi, Colette.
she was from Roscommon. We always went to her every Tuesday night since we were, I'd say, 8 or 9, up until we were in sixth year. So yeah, it was a long road of it. But no, she was brilliant. And then a family friend, Niamh Brett. She also helped me. She did my sixth year exam. My live music, I suppose, performance.
Yeah.
So she played the piano with me, and she taught me, and I played the accordion. So, yeah, it was that was good. It was probably my best subject in sixth year.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So,
What's an ideal night in for the family in your house? It's everybody take their instrument.
Yeah, we have quite a large family. Every Stephen's Day is a tradition. Usually it's people just come to your house
next Stephen's Day. Sounds fabulous. Yeah,
it's just a round the fire session, a few drinks. Hopefully, yeah, I'm all right. I'm okay to say that.
You are at the moment.
Yeah. a few drinks, a bit of food, and then just a session in the house for the night. Good crack.
It sounds good.
Yeah, it's kind of like, people just arrive, there's no text sent out. It's kind of like, we'd say it on Christmas Day when we meet each other up at our grandparents' house, we're like, yours tomorrow. I'm like, yeah, grand. We don't say it to mom and dad because we're no longer living in the house, but we just say, oh yeah, I just arrived. They can't say anything.
It's the hub.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant, yeah. Brilliant. So you have a big smile on your face. You're looking fit and well, but you're sitting here with me and no rugby for you for the moment.
Yeah, it's been tough. I've been injured the last 10 weeks. So had wrist operation and I've been recovering from that. So nearly there. It's been good news. The last couple of weeks I've been back training. So the highs and lows of sport, I suppose. But listen, it's been a good period for me. Just to grow myself off the pitch. Mentally and physically, it's been a good opportunity to, come back a better player, hopefully. So the next few weeks are going to be big.
So what does that look like, growing yourself off the pitch? What does Robbie do to make that happen?
I suppose it's everything. It's my own personal relationship, with my family, with my partner. And then it's kind of like, doing things outside of rugby. So a bit of charity work, working with, seeing if I can grow my kind of network, putting myself out there, trying to meet people in different industries.
So go back to the charity work for a minute. Mm. So I have two nonprofits, and I certainly know that I gravitated towards the stuff that really mattered to me. And I'm sure you're not standing out there shaking a bucket. I'm sure you're involved in something meaningful. Mm. So what is that?
I'm an ambassador for Breast Cancer Ireland. How it came about, a good family friend of ours, Aisling Hurley, is the CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, asked me would I be interested to be affiliated with the charity. And I was absolutely, I was proud to be asked, and I was delighted to say yes. I think everyone knows someone who's suffered from breast cancer. Me personally, I know people from home who've had it. And I just think it's good, from my point of view, to have, a male ambassador in there promoting it.
And it's really important, isn't it?
Yeah.
For so many reasons. Mm. And we were talking earlier about, our collective interest in the area of evolving our society, inclusion, equality, core values that are so important to the brand of Audi as well. And I actually think that what you're doing as standing as a male ambassador for breast cancer is really important, because men's role in change and changing perceptions is not to be underestimated. Mm. And I certainly have a desire to see a nationwide campaign of men standing in support of women, told from the male perspective, because I think that's the new level of leadership that our country needs. And it is, all the good stuff around the, sportsman position, married with the humility and the empathy and the understanding of what we need to be a better society.
Absolutely. 100%. And it's a growing space. And I think educating people about it, it's definitely becoming more common. And I think the more we can do, as a sports person, to promote that in my own way, I think the better for it. And as well, not to leave out Josh van der Flyer, he's also an ambassador for Breast Cancer Ireland too. So there's two rugby lads who are there.
You see, the collegiate team-like spirit comes to the fore every time.
Yeah.
So you're talking about your charity work. Mm. I think that's a real indicator that you're looking out, that you're possibly looking at next steps and life beyond. Not that I'm suggesting that you're going anywhere in a hurry, but I think that's an important part of a consideration that elite sports players have to make.
100%. Remember when I first came into the sport, an ex-coach said to me, you're only one injury away from this career finishing. So that kind of, when you think about that, it's so true. I've seen it, more recently with a lot of players who've had their career cut short because of injury. And that's just the the harsh nature of the sport. But for me, I've always had an eye on you know, getting my education alongside playing sport. I completed an arts degree in UCD, did geography and economics. So probably what's on my mind now is I need to maybe go again and further that education. Not really sure what that looks like. I'm kind of looking at some kind of masters, maybe in business, have a bit of an interest in business, and then kind of using my down days, so this period while I was injured, to go out and do some work experience with different companies and just kind of get a feel for life after rugby, life in the office, what it's like to do a shift in the office is completely different to, in a good way. I came home after one day of work to my partner Sophie, and I said, you know what, I think I could give it a good stab. She was like, I think you'd find you get restless, you get bored. I was like, no, I think a good environment, good people, you know, I think I'd be able to fit in.
And is there a sense, even despite that, of trepidation at the prospect, I suppose, of having to shift your own identity?
There is, yeah. I think for me, I'm a person who hopefully won't have to, you know, lean on my past career going forward into the next chapter. I want to kind of kick on to something new. So obviously, I want to do my best for the time being, but when this chapter is finished, I want to close it and enter a new one. What that looks like again is I'm not sure, but you know, I want to really do something, you know, and not hopefully not rely on my past to write my future.
I mentioned, you know, equality and diversity, and that's obviously not obviously, but it is a big area of interest of mine. And you immediately came in with ESG. Mm. So this is something that you're obviously marinating on at the moment.
Yeah. So it's a project I've been kind of working on in a company. I'm not going to name the company at the moment, but working on an ESG report in my work experience. So it's been... Yeah, it's been good. I can kind of...
I'm sorry, I'm struggling to find a national hero talking about work experience. I'm just trying to process that at the moment. There's something just not adding up. But anyway, carry on.
Yeah, it's great because I can kind of see some little trends from what I studied in geography and social geography coming through to it's understandable. So my first few days I came home and I was kind of like, okay, this is good. I can kind of understand it. It's not too hard. We've been working on a report, just getting to understand, say, carbon offsetting, carbon emissions, greenhouse gases, all things that I would have...
Scope 3.
Yeah, exactly. Scope 2. All that stuff. And then the social side to it, which is huge, even on the board, having, you know, that equality on the board. So the percentage male to female, even the employees in the workplace, how your workplace is, you know, coming to a net zero carbon. So it's great. And it's day to day things. You can see that people are very aware of, you know.
So does that tickle you, that sort of social innovation piece?
I think so, yeah, because again, it's for me, I was kind of like, I'm able to draw examples to it, I'm able to understand it. So being there, reading about it, it's been easy to do, and I've liked it as well. So it does a little bit, obviously change with times, climate change and how we're going to deal with that. It is a big thing, and I suppose for us going forward, future with people, the next generation coming up, I think we have to have an eye on that to make sure they have a good life, in the future.
This podcast is called Driving Progress. And, you know, I'm getting a sense of your relationship with change. And it's kind of an immutable truth. Everything that we do, every phase of our life sort of makes us have to face into change. And can you see elements of your sporting career that can make that easier, perhaps?
I think so, yeah. You know, again, it's sport, my sport career, it's so fast and snappy that, like, change is, like, for an example, you get injured, yeah, your schedule is now changed for the next 4, 5, 6 weeks. You know, you lose a big game. Now if towards the end of the year, you're hoping to get to the finals, then your season's cut short. So I think everything happens really quickly in sport. And being change-wise, things happen, things change. And that's probably a thing I'm used to, is, like, even performance-wise. You know, you can have a really good game, you can have a average game, things change, you know, selection, things like that. So again, I spoke to someone recently who'd exited the sport and said, when you move to the corporate world or move to business, he said it just doesn't happen as fast. And that was one thing that they said they found hard to adjust to was the period of the long period of the change or of transitioning, in terms of waiting on deals come true or, you know, getting something across the line. He said just things move a lot slower. So
and the bigger the company, the slower they move. Mm. You know, you're into that kind of super tanker exactly. mode as opposed to the little speedboat. Mm. You know,
exactly.
What are your sort of non-negotiables then in terms of the next phase? Not again that I'm wishing you away at all, but, you know, even the value set, the things that have to be in place for something to be right for you.
Yeah, I suppose my own personal values, you know, respect, absolutely respect, be humble, you know. For me, it's always looking to improve. Where can I add value? Where can I, you know, offer help anywhere? And to moving on to, I'd always, you know, good manners, respect is a smile, I think, goes a long way. General positivity, I think, moving into someone else's company, I think if they're welcoming, they're respectful, and I think, yeah, if they're happy and positive, I think
you're kind of talking about the concept of servant leadership.
Really?
Are you familiar with
it?
Yeah. Good leaders eat last is the book for you.
Really?
Yeah. It's a really lovely concept that you're leading to serve your people rather than command and control, I suppose, which would be the old school. And there's a lot of research out on that in terms of building inclusive cultures, this idea that the key components of leadership are humility, are empathy, respect, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And a sort of a quiet courage, I think. I can totally see you CEOing into the future.
No pressure.
None at all.
Yeah.
And if you were to put yourself in a sector, where would it be?
I think I'm going to say for now, somewhere in a commercial role, somewhere dealing with.
Are you a seller?
No, not a seller, but I think I'd be innovative. Like, I'd be able to, you know, come up with new ideas, you know, have a look towards the future, coming to looking at different things. I think working with a team of people,
sounds like a game of rugby to me.
Planning.
I don't want to put too fine a point on it,
I think, yeah, a team that I can, you know, ask questions, bounce off people. Whereas I've never really been put in the role of like a commander kind of or a director. Whereas I'd like to be same level working with people. I don't know what that looks like.
I think you'd be a pretty good commander now from this side of the table. What are the things that people don't know about you or wouldn't expect to hear about you?
Oh, God.
Because you're just too nice, Robbie. That's the problem.
Wait till you play rugby. Go onto the pitch.
I'm not getting onto the pitch. That's for sure.
You gave away the one thing I was relying on was music, but I think people know about that now.
What's your nickname?
Don't really have what's the tie call me? Squeeze Box Bob.
That was sounds a funny like a Simpsons one. Character.
Yeah. And a few lads have referenced the accordion before. It's called, I've funny ones called the Juice Box.
Brilliant.
Yeah, Geordie Murphy had that one. But yeah, no, it's other side to me. I'm from the Midlands. I'm going to promote the Midlands here now because it's kind of I love it. The lake. We're from Westmeath, so we're growing up on the lake, Lough Ree.
Stunning.
Really nice. Have you been?
I have, yeah. And it is a wonderful, mythical, historic part of the world.
Mm. I think just a day in the lake, go fishing, go and see what's around, rent a boat. I think it's hard to beat on a nice sunny day. Now it's rare we get good weather there, but no, I think for me, outside of my life, I think to switch off, I like going home, going out in the boat, going fishing.
Can you turn it off? Can you just turn it off and move on?
It's very tough, incredibly tough. I'd be sitting on the couch and my girlfriend would ask me, like, what are you thinking about? I'd be like, I'm just running through a play in my head, or, you know, you'd always think about upcoming things, what's next, or you'd have a flashback of a game that you're like, that worked, that didn't. Always kind of
processing.
Yeah. So yeah, it's probably going to be, it'll be easier said than done to move on from it, but also to switch it off. It's so tough, because every person you talk to is, it's brilliant because rugby's grown so much in the last decade. It's incredible. People are in awe of the game. They love it. So I love talking about it, but then there has to be that element of, you know, separation.
And it's grown because of the team, right? Mm. Because of the performance, because of the success.
Yeah, exactly.
You're part of that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's hard to talk about it though when you're not involved. That's tough. When you're injured and you can't contribute. But yeah, looking back, it's been brilliant. My mum, speaking to my mum today, she was like, before you come back in that pitch now, she's like, I want you to watch that All Blacks documentary. She was like, it'll give you good confidence. So yeah, I think looking back on big moments like that, you know, gives you good confidence and also puts a smile on your face, because there, at the time, it happens like in the blink of an eye, and then it's on to the next thing. It's really hard to like stand back and take it all in.
And how difficult is it to watch from the sidelines now?
It's incredibly difficult at the game, because I'm almost looking at lads tackling each other. I'm like, God, like, we actually play the sport. And like, when you see some of the collisions, you hear it. It's way scarier than when you're actually out there.
You're probably saved by the adrenaline in the moment.
Yeah, and when you see the collisions, like, honestly, I'm kind of like, this happens, like, but it's kind of in the moment. It doesn't feel as fast as you see it. It's tough. And then, I prefer watching at home where you can see more as well. So, or watching on TV where you can see more happening.
And is confidence an issue coming back from an injury?
Yeah, massive. I think it's always the first or second game back is always because people will be watching you. You know, it almost focuses on you. You're it's your first game back. How are you going to look? Will you be rusty? The expectation to, you know, get up to speed straight away with the team after being out. It is tough, but again, all the work that you do in your rehab is all geared towards you hitting the ground running. Come that
physically and mentally.
Yeah, physically and mentally.
So you're ready.
Yes.
Absolutely. Robbie, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you today talking Driving Progress with Audi. I wish you the very best of luck on the final leg of your recovery.
Thanks very much.